Yo Pods, check out Meet Mitch and Leewood for award-winning barbecue, outstanding atmosphere, and your destination to watch all your favorite March Madness action. Tailgating for opening day? Place your order online and pick up on way to the game. Meet Mitch Barbecue, East 95th and Mission in Ranch Martin or Shopping Center.
I like that. Good stuff. Welcome back to Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810, WHB in Kansas City and across the Midwest. Cranking out 50,000 watts. You can listen worldwide by getting the app at 810WHB.com. It's a little bit overcast this morning. It's going to get a little steamy, and then we might see some rain or thunderstorms later this afternoon or tonight. But right now, you can get out there and swing the golf clubs or get some yard work done or run your kids around. You can listen to us while you're doing it. I appreciate it. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bohlig is running the show. And our guest right now is Lynn Worthy, Royals beat writer for the Kansas City Star, who's on the road with the team in Arlington. Lynn, how are you this morning?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I have traveled to Arlington a few times back in the days when I used to travel with the Royals. And I laughed at the picture you posted on Twitter a couple of days ago because there's, for some reason, there's an amusement park out there, and I'm not really sure why. But it's kind of close to the Rangers ballpark, and your picture from the hotel room window was like, can I write this off as a business expense if I go over and ride the roller coasters? And I said, if you can see the stadium from there, that's called research.
Yeah, it's. I kind of realized that there was something close by because there's literally one of the roads, like road to Six Flags. So I was like, oh, Six Flags must be somewhere around here because I hadn't been here before. And then when I actually get to the hotel, I'm like, okay, I could literally see Six Flags through the same window I see the ballpark. And I'm like, all right, well, I mean, clearly it's not that far away. I have not made it over to Six Flags, but I'm not stranger to roller coasters back in the day.
All right. Good stuff. Well, you know, we split the first two games of the series between the Royals and the Rangers. And last night, for me in particular, it was frustrating because Danny Duffy was dominating, right? Slider was just awesome. His breaking stuff lately has been great. His previous six starts, I thought, were all really good. And you get to that sixth inning, and that's where usually Danny Duffy runs into trouble a little bit. And so I'm watching the game, and I'm thinking, okay, walk the leadoff man. He comes back with a strikeout, and I'm like, okay, then maybe. And then puts more guys on. He issues a bases-loaded walk, and then he gives up the grand slam. And I thought, you know, the warning signs were there. But what did Ned Yost tell you guys after the game about why he let Danny Duffy keep pitching in that inning?
Well, I mean, I think, at least from my perspective, so I'm watching it, and I see – I mean, the walk, obviously, you never want to start off with the walk. He strikes out the next batter. And then he ended up giving up four hits in the inning. Now, he'd given up two singles the whole game, hadn't walked anybody before that inning. He gave up four hits in the inning. But I think of the first three before the grand slam, really only one of them was really hit hard. I mean, you had an infield single.
Right.
And the one that Duffy came off the mound to field, and then it looked like he looked to third first, but then through the first. I mean, yeah, then he looked to third, then through the first. Couldn't get Pence, who was hustling out of the box. But the one before that was the one that just sort of kept, just went right out of Nicky Lopez's reach at second. He dove and just, couldn't get that one, which potentially you get at least one out of that, maybe two, might have been tough to turn to. But the single up the middle from Andrews was the only one that was really squared up and hit hard. Now, then he walks and run in. And I guess at that point, it's, you know, they had Boxberger warming up for the next batter. They weren't, you know, and Yost, this is where Yost actually said that, you know, they didn't think he was going to give up the home run there. They said, okay, Boxberger's warming up in case he loses Gallo. They're thinking maybe he walks him. But they weren't expecting the grand slam at that point. And even if he walks them, then it's, you know, it's tied. And then that gives them the one-run lead. So they're thinking that maybe they'll be down a run if he loses them. Up to that point, he'd struck out Gallo twice in the two previous at-bats. So I think they just really looked at it and said, you know, they were counting on Duff to still be able to get through that inning, to be able to get Gallo to at least get them to the next batter. And if he didn't get to the next batter, minimal damage. But, of course, Gallo just jumped all over that one. And that was that was all she wrote, because, I mean, it went from tie game to 6-2, and that was what the final score was.
We're speaking with Lynn Worthy, Royals beat writer for the Kansas City Star. And Lynn, that's why you're the considered writer, and I'm just the guy that talks on the radio, because I just lose my mind. Why they should have gotten Duffy out of there? Why didn't blah, blah, blah. You're the guy who comes back and says, well, he struck out Gallo twice before, and he wasn't in totally a bad spot, and then just sent one right down the middle. So that's why you're the more considerate writer.
Well, I mean, it's one of those things where the emotion and the, you know, that reaction that you had, I mean, that's part of, you know, being a fan. That's part of, you know, why you follow a team. That's, you know, if you're not feeling some type of way about every decision, then you probably aren't that invested in it, or you don't really care. But at the same time, you know, obviously from my perspective, you got to sort of be, you can't really play the result in that, you know, where it's like, okay, they gave up the grand slam. Clearly they did something wrong. It's like, well, the decisions are made in real time off the information that you had going into that moment. And so, I mean, he cruised through five, only gave up two singles, hadn't walked anybody. His pitch count was real good. I mean, before that sixth inning, you're thinking he's going to go deep in this game. This might be, you know, potentially an eight-inning thing, or he's going to probably get through seven. I mean, hadn't given up anything. And he'd been the one sort of consistent guy in this bullpen since he'd come off the IL, pretty much. And then, you know, again, the soft contact probably makes you think, well, he could still get through this. He's got a lefty up there who he'd struck out twice, and then boom. You know, I mean, Gallo's been, on the other side of that, Gallo's been hitting, swinging the ball real well.
Yep.
And, you know, he was, I believe, coming into the night, tied for fifth, I want to say, in home runs. I think there's a bunch of guys who had 17 who were all tied for first, and then you got down to the next groupers with 15. So, I mean, he'd been swinging it real well, but I think they looked at it and said, you know, they trusted Duffy and probably trusted him a little bit too much just in hindsight.
We're speaking with Lynn Worthy, Royals beat writer for the Kansas City Star. If you want to follow him on Twitter, it's L Worthy Sports. And Lynn, I want to ask you also about Nicky Lopez. He's, you know, scuffled a little bit since he's come up, and you know, part of that is a product of a first time in the big leagues, but then, you know, starting second in the order and then moving to the top of the order. That's a lot of pressure for a young player getting his first crack at the big leagues. As you've been around Nicky Lopez, and I hear nothing but great things about his attitude, how has he kind of adapted to this and try to get through this the early struggles?
No, I think he's taken it in stride. I mean, I think he knew coming up to the big leagues that, you know, everything wasn't going to be roses. I mean, he was swinging it well. I mean, his first few games at homestand, you know, he was getting on base a lot. He had a game, I can't remember, I think it was on the road, the last road trip where he had, through the first certain number of games he'd gotten on base more than anybody in Royals history to start their career, other than I think Johnny Damon or something like that. So I mean, to start off, he was rolling pretty well, but he also just arrived in the big league, so I don't know that you could plan on that, you know, really staying that way. I mean, it just doesn't happen. Teams or in the big leagues, you know, players are really good. Teams are smart. They'll get used to you, or they'll get a book on you. They'll find where the weakness is, and they'll attack it. And you have to learn to adjust to that. I mean, that's for everybody, not just Nicky Lopez. I didn't get a chance to ask him, but Chicago, I also wonder, I mean, there was a lot going on in Chicago because he had, I think there were 40, 50, 60 people or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Illinois native. So that were there to watch him. And I mean, I think there was one point during one of the rain delays where there was just almost a section of people who were down like by the fence that he was talking to. So, I mean, that, you know, I don't know how much that plays a part, but playing in front of the, you know, friends and family and a ballpark that you probably, you know, went to as a kid, it can maybe help affect your focus a little bit. But, I mean, again, it's early on in the kid's career. I don't think anybody should have thought when he came up he was going to be a savior. Batting where he's batting, that was one of those things that we asked about day one, is at the top of the order. I mean, you could have put him down at the bottom of the order just to sort of ease him in, but they believe he's a type of guy that is going to be on base a lot. He's going to be a consistent contact type guy. He allows the order to sort of bumped down a little bit, where you have Whit now in the second spot and Mondi third and Gordo fourth and Dozier fifth. And so you get this, you know, almost artificially lengthened the lineup because the bottom of the lineup had struggled so much. So I'm not sure. Originally the plan was he was going to probably get a day off here in Arlington, but now with Dozier and everything, I'm not sure if that's still the plan. But I think he'll be fine. I think it's just, you know, what you probably expect for a guy who's still making his first experience in the big leagues.
Speaking of Hunter Dozier, we know he got banged up the other night and he's missed a couple of ball games. Lynn, what is the thorax stretch on his right? I don't know what that means. How has it been explained?
I believe the initial wording was right-sided thorax tightness, to which we were all like, what?
What? Exactly. That was my reaction.
We all ran directly to Google to be like, okay, what are we talking about here? After that game, we talked to him, and it looked like when we talked to him, the area he was pointing to was more like a, I don't know if it's exactly the abdominals, but like somewhere in between the abs and the chest. And he said it was just some tightness there. He'd swung at a change up and swung through and felt it. Through the rest of the bat, it just kept getting tight. It doesn't sound like it's anything major, but they wanted to shut it down before it got worse. It's totally separate than the back stuff that he'd been dealing with that kept him out of a game or two and then kept him at DH last month. So it's a separate issue altogether from that. They didn't do any on-field work yesterday before the game. They didn't take BP, so it wasn't like we could get a chance to see if he was doing anything at all or if he was completely shut down. But I'm not sure if they're doing work out there on the field today, but I get the feel it's going to probably be at least a couple of days. Maybe it'll be till early next week, which is part of the reason that they needed to make the move to bring Chesler Cuthbert up and have somebody who could play there for, you know, a week if needed. It doesn't sound like it's a major thing at this point, but it's definitely worth keeping an eye on. And obviously he'd been one of the best hitters in the American League thus far.
We're speaking with Lynn Worthy, Royals beat writer for the Kansas City Star. Royals and Rangers this afternoon, just after 3 o'clock. Chris Bohlig will have baseball tonight at 2 o'clock here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Lynn, you mentioned Chesler Cuthbert, and I talked about this a little bit last night. When I look at numbers, you know, AAA and AA, I'm usually looking at the top prospects. You know, the Nicky Lopez's, the Nicky Prados, and players like that. And I have to confess, I wasn't paying a lot of attention to Chesler Cuthbert's numbers because, you know, he was off the 40-man roster and, you know, he had not hit real well while he was in the big leagues. He seemed like a 4A player. But so far this season in Omaha, I was kind of stunned. He had 8 home runs in 51 games. He's hitting over .300. He's getting on base, putting up some power numbers. I was surprised at how good those numbers were, and I hope that some of that can translate here with the big league club.
Yeah, I mean, if nothing else, he's a guy who's had experience in the big leagues, who's shown that he's, you know, he's capable in the big leagues. I think the last year, a lot of the issue was, you know, he wasn't healthy. He had a back issue, and not being healthy and trying to produce every day or at least on a regular basis, you know, it takes a lot of guys' numbers down. Now, this year, I mean, he says he's healthy. He says he hasn't really done a whole lot different other than maybe some more focus. Of course, you know, just the other thing that it's hard to factor in is the PCL has some ballparks where the ball just flies too. So when you see power numbers, sometimes the PCL, you got to take some of them with a grain of salt. That being said, I know the Royals and their people, they're looking at more than just the stats when it comes to, okay, is this guy really swinging it well? Is he getting some help from some of the elevation? You know, they're looking at, you know, the hard hit rates. They're looking at the angles. They're looking at the type of contact he's making. So, and then also just the fact that they've seen him, you know, more than just this these 51 games in AAA where he was swinging it well, to be able to get a read on, you know, what he's actually doing. But also, I mean, it fills a need because with Hunter out of there right now, the other option for third at this point would have been Chris Owings. And obviously they made that move because they decided that having Chris out, running him out there for in the starting lineup for multiple days at least and potentially an extended period of time was not going to be a workable option.
We're speaking with Lynn Worthy, Royals beat writer for the Kansas City Star. And Chris, let me double check something. I think I may have misspoke. Today's game, first pitch at 2 o'clock, not three, right? It's at 3 o'clock. Okay. All right. 3:50. It's just weird having day games on a weekend in Arlington. And I know once you get past June, you're not going to see that anymore. But Lynn, today's matchup, Homer Bailey takes the hill for the Royals. And I know he's got to be frustrated a little bit with the roller coaster type season he's having. I know he's coming back from injury. He's trying to reestablish himself. But when from game to game, it's such wild swings. You go from, and I'm just going in reverse order over his last handful of starts, one earned run, then it's five, then it's five, then it's one, then it's two, then it's four. Has he kind of talked about the inconsistency a little bit and where he gets in trouble?
Well, I mean, to him, I think it's one of those things where he tries to approach everything the same way, and then there's just those days where, if he's just off, then there's really not a whole lot you can do about it. I mean, like, he's had some of those outings that were just really short, where it was like, okay, you could tell from the jump it wasn't gonna happen, and then it obviously puts pressure on the bullpen. It's not what you're looking for when you get started. It's, can't make it through three, four innings, something like that. But then he's also had those outings, like you said, where he's been. He's looked really good. He's looked like that veteran who, still has some decent stuff, who knows what he wants to do, how to attack hitters. You could tell there's the frustration when he's got those games where he just sort of can't get anything to work the way he wants it. But it's not like there's a commonality. I mean, like, even the games where he's able to where he gives up walks, a lot of times he's able to work out of those situations. And then there's sometimes where he just can't get out of, he can't make those one or two pitches that, would probably change that outing or change the outlook of an outing. But there's not a big, that's one of the things that makes it more frustrating. There's not a big, big swing from, or a big difference to be able to tell you that this one's going to be, a great night, or this one's going to be just a awful night until it actually plays out. And it really might just be a couple of batters difference that, swing it one way or another. But he seems to be approaching everything the same. He's been around the game so long, seen so much, been through ups and downs. I mean, a guy who's got no hitters under his belt, but also had a season last year where he's 1-14, I believe. So I think he's at that point where he sort of, can compartmentalize and move on to the next one. And it would have been interesting to see, because he was on the mound that game where, by the fifth inning, they were in a monsoon, and it was
right.
Interesting to see what that outing looked like. But once you got into the delays and everything, his night was surely over. It'll be another. Let's see what we got today once he hits the mound.
All right, Lynn. Final question for you. I think Royals fans were more than happy to see the decision on Chris Owings to be DFA'd. And look, I've covered this game a long time. I've been in those clubhouses. Nobody's trying to fail. And I don't root against guys ever, but at some point, enough is enough. It's not only unhealthy for the team, it's unhealthy for the player, as he has to walk in there every day. And after, several weeks, at least from my experience, guys get a little irritated knowing that, well, if I get on, he's not going to do anything for me. Or, if we get on a little cycle here or a little rally here, he's going to kill it for us. And it becomes an unhealthy situation. And I heard Ned Yost's comments about we got to the point where we couldn't wait anymore. And the only thing I'm surprised by is that it took this long. But it's a move that had to be made.
Yeah, and I mean, I think early in the season he was playing almost every day and in different spots, and they'd scaled back on that. I mean, I think they had initially intended to scale back on that a little bit earlier than they did, but then I think that was right around the time that Dozier was not playing the field, and then until I think they got Gutierrez up, you still saw Owings a few more days than you probably would have. And then the other thing I think is, and they wouldn't say this, but I think they were in the back of their minds, they wanted to try and get him going, at least get some sort of offense out of him. So, he would have potentially been a chip down the line that, maybe you can try and move him. Again, that's just me speculating, not them saying that. But, yeah, it just wasn't happening. He was at least, and the thing that they sort of hung their hat on for a little while was that he gave you versatility in defense where you could plug him in, and, he gave you that at least if you needed him. The other thing, the main reason that he was there in the first place, too, was just as good, and he's been really good, as Alberto Mondesi has been, they wanted that backstop there because Mondesi's track record the last, you know, 4 or 5 years is if you get to 100 games, 110 games, then you're lucky. It might be less than that. And you need somebody, they wanted somebody else who could play that shortstop position that they knew could handle it, was a veteran. You know, I mean, at that point, again, Nicky Lopez wasn't on the roster. Right now, he's probably your backup guy at short, but that's the main reason that he was here. But clearly, it just, you know, it didn't work out. I think they tried to give as much time as they could, try to make use of him, try to scale it back so it wasn't a drag on the lineup. And I think also for a little while there, I mean, there was a bunch of guys at the bottom of the order where you weren't getting production. So it was one of those things where, not that you really want to approach it this way, but you could almost be like, well, he's not the only one who's struggling to swing the bat right now. At least you get some defense out of him and versatility out of him. But for an extended period of time of him having to be out there, it would have only gotten worse. So yeah, it was something they had to do at this point.
All right, Lynn, hey, thank you very much. I appreciate your time. We got two day games here for the Royals in Arlington today and tomorrow, and then Monday is the draft. So you certainly have your work cut out for you and all the guys, all the people at the Kansas City Star. So you got a busy few days ahead.
yeah, and I'm sure folks will keep their eyes out for last I knew, tonight was supposed to be the first double-A start for one Brady Singer, too. So,
oh, boy.
That'll be another thing to keep an eye out for.
Okay. We'll be following that. We got some good guys on Twitter, like Clint Scholes, who do a lot of work studying the minor leagues. So we'll definitely keep an eye on that tonight. Lynn, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
All right. That is Lynn Worthy, Royals beat writer for the Kansas City Star. If you want to follow him on Twitter, at LWorthySports. And the thing about the Star is they'll make that a team effort. When you got games to cover and you have the draft going on, it'll be a team effort over there. I'm sure Pete Gradoff will be involved, maybe Blair Kirchhoff get involved in that. So it's I'm looking forward to it. I mean, we don't have a lot to look forward to right now.
It's all in the future, Brad. it's all relative.
Isn't everything?
It's all relative.
Isn't it everything? It's like that scene from that scene from Spaceballs where they're watching their own movie. When will now be then? It just was. Well, when will the future be here? We already passed it. They're rewinding the tape to see what happens. God, I haven't watched that in a while. That is so funny. My kids absolutely love it. They debated whether or not, you know, you got to get to the right age before they can watch it.
It's been a while since I've seen Spaceballs, but yes, pretty funny flick.
Yes. Pretty much, I would bet 99% of the things Mel Brooks has been involved with in his life are just gold. Maybe it's 100%. I don't know.
Yeah. Were those like the same guys that were involved in Airplane, or is that those were
no,
different guys?
That's
those
different
were different.
Guys.
Yeah. But those, yeah, Spaceballs was definitely. That was funny stuff.
Mel Brooks is in your movie or writing your movie. That's gold. You pretty much lock that in. All right. On that note, we will take a timeout. We've got the last half hour of this hour coming up, and then at 11 o'clock, we'll talk a little college baseball, basketball, and college football with Aaron Torres, who does a lot of writing, does a podcast, does a little bit of everything. But he's got his Way Too Early College Basketball Top 25 and some interesting notes considering who some of the coaches are. So that'll be fun stuff. Back after this quick timeout, you're listening to Sports Saturday. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bohlig is running the show. You're on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back into Sports Saturday. Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City. Pretty nice morning so far. Folks probably heading out to play some golf. Or probably wanted to get out this morning. You can do that like at 7 in the morning.
Going to the lake, maybe?
Going to the lake again, sure. Driving the kids around to soccer, lacrosse, whatever else is going on. Good stuff with Lynn Worthy from the Kansas City Star, Royals beat writer. His first season as Royals beat writer.
Yes, did a lot of stuff for the Chiefs. I believe he's Chiefs beat writer for the past season. So.
Yep, him and Brooke Pryor together.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Moved him to the Royals beat because what's her name left in the middle of the season last year?
I think it was Maria Torres.
Maria
right?
Torres.
Yeah, she went to Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Cover the Angels.
Yeah. Yeah, that was kind of, it's kind of weird to lose your beat writer in the middle of a season, but oh well, that's fine. She's a great writer. I always loved her stuff. But yeah, Lynn's down with the team in Arlington, 3 o'clock this afternoon, first pitch, 2 o'clock for baseball tonight with Chris Bohlig.
Yep.
So the Chris Owings thing, and I just want to stress this again, I don't root for people to fail. And once he was failing so bad, I didn't want it to keep happening. It's not good for him. It's not good for the team. It can create issues in the clubhouse. And guys look around and say, why is this guy playing again? Why is he getting at-bats? I'm sure he's good defensively, and he's a very nice guy. But you can't have it after a while. I've seen that firsthand. You just can't. It becomes an issue. Because let me give you an example. Occasionally teams have, you know, the closed-door meeting, the players-only meeting. The rule is, I can't remember who told me this, a former player told me, if you have more than one closed-door meeting in a season, things are not going well, and you're not going to win. But what generally happens in these closed-door meetings, and I'm not saying the Royals had one, I don't think they have, but what generally happens in these closed-door meetings is you'll have your team leaders, your captain, your veteran guys get up and maybe chew a guy out. You're not getting it done. You have to be accountable. You're not helping the ball club. You're hurting the ball club. And that would have been, Chris Owings would have been target number one. You're not helping the ball club. It was not good for him to still be here, and it was not good for the team to still be here. I hope good things happen for him down the road. I'm not real confident. This is a couple of years worth of these kind of numbers, declining numbers. Just, I don't see it, but good luck. He's going to make his full $3 million, so not going to feel too bad for him.
Yeah, I mean, kind of just beating a dead horse at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, it is what it is. You can't really do anything about it. He's still getting paid.
Yep.
You know, so I don't know. But I thought there's some, other than the Royals, I think there's some interesting things I'd like to address and hit on.
Sure.
So Dennis Dodge is tweeting out that three more UCLA. So there's this thing earlier this week about former UCLA football player suing the school for head trauma and certain things, a football player, and saying that practices and whatnot caused a lot of his head trauma and not getting the proper, you know, medical treatment or whatnot. And now three more players have come forward suing the school over head trauma issues from their days of playing at UCLA. So I thought that was just something interesting to bring up in terms of, you know, we talked, I think, last week about it, or when Dennis talked about, when we had him on Monday,
mm-hmm.
we talked about his article where KU is having to go straight to medical professionals, not just trainers. They're going to be working directly with medical staff to address the issue of concussions and protocols and whatnot.
Yeah, the trainers at KU are going to be under medical professionals instead of administrators. And as Dennis also pointed out, the strength and conditioning coaches are also going to be under this umbrella, under medical professionals, and not just having to answer to the coach or the administrator. But you're going to see this more and more. You just are. Think of the number of guys in the NFL who played, who sued, and got the settlement. There's 50 times more that played college football. This will happen more and more. I don't really have an opinion about it. If you suffered because that you had to play through a concussion or whatever, didn't get the proper treatment, good luck. It's something that's going to happen not only at the Division I level, but levels down further as well. Where we've seen the horrific stories over the years of kids dying in practice, kids suffering permanent damage in practice as well as games. So this will happen more and more and more. What about we were talking during the break about the wide receiver.
Yeah, so Brew McCoy.
Okay.
He is the number one athlete in the country for the 2019 class. So he's technically, you know how they label it, wider, he's an athlete.
He's an athlete, okay.
And he's the number two prospect in California, number nine prospect overall. He went to Mater Dei, where
Matt Barkley,
very, very big powerhouse in Southern California and Orange County. So originally, he had committed to play at Southern California, USC. Cliff Kingsbury leaves. He's the original offensive coordinator. And so
for about a week.
Yeah, for about a week. And so McCoy decides to withdraw from USC and enter the transfer portal.
Okay.
And since the NCAA has really been lightning, or I guess lightning on the leash in terms of guys getting waivers to transfer and whatnot, so he decides that he wants to take his talents to the University of Texas in Austin. Okay. And so he goes down there. He's going to be able to play immediately. And he goes through spring ball. And now reports this week say he's getting very homesick. It's nothing against the university. And he's in the, and then Texas flew out Tom Herman, Sam Ellinger, to try to re-recruit him to convince him to stay. He ultimately decides that he doesn't want to stay at Texas. And he's now back in the transfer portal and he's going back home. It looks like he will probably go back to USC, but it hasn't been confirmed. I'm reading Ben Kirchvoll, a friend of ours, on CBS Sports. He's covering this. He's down in Austin. That's where his home is. So he's been up to date on this story. So it's going to be interesting how the NCAA deals with his situation in terms of will he have to sit out a year or not. You've seen guys like Justin Fields and Tate Martell, guys of that nature who have gone to big programs, big recruits, and getting waivers to go to different schools. It's kind of turning into this free agency-esque kind of deal in college football and even college basketball in terms of how the NCAA wants to issue waivers and whatnot.
I don't get leaving one school and going to another. Okay, I'm good with that. But leaving the second school to go back to the first school, I'm not sure how I feel about that. I mean, this happens all the time. Kids get homesick and maybe he had, I mean, if the whole reason he left USC in the first place was because Cliff Kingsbury left, what did he think he was finding in Texas that apparently wasn't good enough or wasn't working for him? Was it the offensive coordinator? Was it Tom Herman? Was it a pretty good quarterback in Sam Ellinger? I don't know. That's strange. I'm wondering if there's more to the story than this. Than just being homesick. Because now, you're putting your transfer in jeopardy. You don't know what the NCAA is going to do. And what are the kids at USC going to think if he's allowed to go back? Well, you didn't think we were good enough before.
Well, I mean, he had the... Well, he wanted to go because Cliff Kingsbury was
right
there.
But what makes it better? What makes it the better place now? Or the more comfortable place now? That doesn't,
the thing
something
was,
here doesn't add up.
He went to UT. He said it was nothing against the school. He got homesick, really homesick, and wanted to...
Something,
I don't know if it's an indictment on Texas or whatnot.
Something's not right
I've
here.
Been to Austin. It's a phenomenal place. I would love to go to school there if I was an 18-year-old.
Yeah.
And the way that the program is ascending right now, and USC is on the downslope, I think your exposure at Texas, especially on primetime games, would be a lot better than going to USC, where the Pac-12 is horrible right now. And
mm-hmm.
USC is – it's so funny because when I was growing up, USC was the standard.
Right.
It was Reggie Bush, Matt Leinart, Clay Matthews.
No, as a kid, UCLA was
– Yeah, and now it's – I mean, Clay Helton, I can't believe he didn't get the axe last year. But Lynn Swann said they're sticking with him. So it's going to be interesting to see in terms of how the NCAA deals with all of these transfers and in the transfer portal and both sports, not only college basketball, but college football as well.
I also think it's weird that the coach would take the quarterback because you know they're on the Texas private jet probably. Okay, student athletes are not employees of the university, therefore they cannot be paid. You kidding me? Quarterbacks on the private jet going out to Southern California to help recruit? All of a sudden it's his job to recruit? Oh, wait a minute, that's not a job. That's a favor. Help us re-recruit the kid. Get on a private jet. Hey, if I'm a 21-year-old kid, I'm quarterback at Texas. They invite me to go on the private jet. I'll go. That sounds like a hell of a lot of fun. But not an employee of the university. Okay, you just keep holding that line, NCAA. Just keep holding that line. That's look, kids like to do this sometimes anyway. Whenever they sign, like, some basketball player signs at KU, and then he's texting the other guys that recruit, "Hey, come to KU, we'll play together." It happens, but that just strikes me as funny.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's just interesting because I was following that just because Big 12 in Texas. I was following this because they once again have a very good recruiting class, top 10 for this upcoming year.
Well, let's see.
I mean,
they do that every year for Texas.
Yeah, I'm just saying now that Herman has been able to establish himself. I don't know if he'll have. It's just like what happened with Charlie Strong. You get the top 10 recruiting classes, but what do you do with the talent? How do you develop it? I still don't think. I think Sam Ellinger's capable, but he's not going to be. He's not exceeding any lofty expectations, in my opinion, in terms of how he throws the ball, his consistency, his accuracy. He can run, which is important for that offense, for at least for Tom Herman. At least when you watch them at Houston, it was a kind of a run and gun, kind of offense. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see. I'm sure Oklahoma is happy to see this news, not having to deal with that.
Absolutely.
So,
all right. We're going to take a quick time out here before we wrap up hour number two. Coming up at 11 o'clock, Aaron Torres will join us. We'll talk college basketball. He's got his My Way Too Early Top 25 and some interesting notes about the coaches and where they've moved and what kind of teams they will have. So we'll do that at 11 o'clock with Aaron Torres. You're listening to Sports Saturday. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bullock is running the show, and you're on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Back on Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City and across the Midwest. I'm a nice Midwestern morning. It's going to be a little sticky today. I might get some rain this afternoon. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bolig is running the show. I just looked up to the TV screen, and they're doing a story about St. Louis hosting the Stanley Cup for the finals for the first time since 1970. I don't really have a stake in these Stanley Cup finals. Actually, I have two, okay? One positive, one just pisses me off. So the Blues, I'll kind of cheer for them. I'm not like, waving the flag or anything like that. But having no NHL team in Kansas City, and my kids were little and growing up, they had St. Louis Blues jerseys. That was the team they picked because I think it's just because they were on Fox Sports all the time. So they were easy to get, and their cousins live over there. So kind of root for that. And I'll root against Boston because I think their fans are just so damn obnoxious. I don't know. There's an arrogance. It's not just that they're rooting for their team. It's an arrogance. I don't know. It's an observation, really. I have no real proof. I have no scientific evidence. But to me, and I've been to games at Fenway Park. I've been to the Patriots Stadium, Gillette Stadium. So I've been around plenty of Boston fans.
Have you been to Wrigley?
I've not been to Wrigley. That's one on my bucket list.
I've been to both Wrigley and Fenway, but I would still side with Fenway.
Being obnoxious?
No, being like, I thought we were talking about just best kind of.
No, you got to stay with the show. Now, I was talking about Boston fans.
Yeah, I don't want Boston to win at all.
No, just the obnoxiousness. We were covering the Chiefs-Patriots playoff game. Walking through the parking lot, and it was just a collection of, I don't want to mischaracterize a whole group of people, but it wasn't the friendly. It wasn't Arrowhead's parking lot. It was it was an unfriendly place to be.
Yeah, Boston fans, not my cup of tea, not really a fan. Also, but Cubs fans are also very annoying, too. My whole family's from Chicago.
Okay.
I
would not have guessed that.
I just think a lot of them act like they've been supporting this team forever, but a lot of them have come on the bandwagon late. I mean, I don't know. That's just my opinion. And I have family there.
Yeah.
So I've been to multiple games there.
If you ever get the chance to go to the White Sox Stadium, they change their sponsor all the time. I don't know what it's called.
Used to be Comiskey, old time.
I'll just call it the park formerly known as Comiskey. There you go. They can have that label.
I think it's U.S. Cellular
if
now.
Actually, I think it's changed since then, too. If you ever get the chance to go to a game on the south side of Chicago, turn it down. It is a bad ballpark. It's butt ugly.
It's just dark. It seems
it's
just so dark.
There's nothing around it. The fans are out. I'm sure if you can go to YouTube. Just YouTube. Go to YouTube or Google White Sox fans fighting. You can usually count on that once during a homestand. That's where Tom Gamboa got attacked, was in Chicago, the former Royals first base coach. Just don't go. Now Fenway's a great place to watch a ball game.
Yeah, I love Fenway.
I remember one of the first times I was there, because when I was traveling with the team, one of my jobs was to do a post-game interview if the Royals won. If they lost, we just didn't do the interview, which I think that's still in place today, that policy. So I would have to go down to the photo bay. And at Fenway, you're right on top of the park. I mean, it is so right on top of the field. So I'm in the photo bay, and one of the veteran photographers said, you better take cover because you're right in the line of fire for foul balls. So I'm down there waiting, and it must have been this 7-8-year-old kid standing there screaming at the players, and Mike Sweeney comes up to bat. And this kid, like I said, 7 or 8, goes, hey, Sweeney, you suck! And everybody around him was like, yeah, tell him! It's just that kind of level. Just be thankful most Royals fans aren't like that.
That's like Philadelphia, too.
I've never been to a game there. I don't need
most
to.
Most big cities are.
Yeah, I just don't need it.
You're going to get those kind of fans.
Yeah, I don't need it. Angels fans are pretty docile. Mariners fans are pretty nice.
I mean, that's West Coast baseball.
Yeah.
I don't know how you'd characterize Dodger. I mean, I don't know. Like, they're in the NL, I don't really know.
Most people there aren't from Los Angeles.
I know
because I've been there.
Dodgers and Giants have a huge rivalry, and there's been some huge problems in terms of fights.
There's been a death.
There's been a death.
Yeah.
So those get very, very heated, per se.
They didn't really have an issue with us, one, because we're in the American League. I said us. With the Royals, or the traveling party, I guess I could say us. They didn't really care because they never play the Royals, hardly. So it wasn't that big a deal. Los Angeles is fine. They come to the games late. Traffic, you got stuff to do.
Takes like, if you're 10 miles away, it takes about 3 hours to get to the stadium.
Where the Royals team hotel was, where we stayed, I think it was in Century City, to the stadium. If it was that distance in Kansas City, 15, 20 minutes. We were coming back from the ballpark at 11 o'clock at night, 2.5 hours. I may be exaggerating a little bit, but it was 1.5, 2 hours. Just mind-numbing. Mind-numbing. Just a couple of more things before we hit the top of the hour and bring in Aaron Torres. Chris mentioned this earlier today. This is kind of a catch-all segment. We're kind of throwing everything in here. We got the hockey. What about you said you have to work while Champions League is on. Liverpool versus Tottenham. And I'm a diehard Liverpool fan. So is my oldest. And one of our friendly rivals on Twitter. I call him friendly rival. Taco Salazar. He is a big Tottenham fan. And I was hoping we would be able to catch up today and watch it together and have a little bet on it, but I think he's out of the country at a wedding.
Out of the country, a little destination style.
Yeah, not his wedding.
But still, going to a destination wedding, that still sounds fun.
Yeah, so you're going to be on the air while it's going on. I've got it set up for DVR, but hopefully I'm going to catch it all live. So I'm going to set it up.
It doesn't start till 2, so you should be good.
Plenty of time to get something to eat, get settled in. Take the dog for a walk and then sit down and watch it. I've been jacked for this game. And it was just, for one, I'm a diehard Liverpool fan, but the way they got in, they had, in the two-game series with Barcelona, they got down 3-0 after that first game and then had to come back and outscore them in the following game. And it was one of those miracle comebacks. Maybe one of the greatest comebacks I've ever seen.
And then the day after, Tottenham had to score 3 goals.
Yeah. Back-to-back days, yeah, just phenomenal.
Had a hat trick from, I think it was Lucas Moura, I believe.
That sounds right.
For Tottenham, so it was. I know a lot of people don't really like Europe, or at least here, are not huge fans of European soccer, but this is a spectacle. This is an event. This is the most major event in world soccer in terms of at the club level.
Right.
And the performances and the talent, the sheer talent that you are watching today is going to be it's next to nothing.
Right. We talked about the World Cup earlier. There's more talent in the European Championship than in the World Cup, and it's not even close. I mean, sure, the best players in the World Cup, but the best players also play for the best club teams. It'll be a spectacular show. If you want a little window into what World Cup 2026 is going to be like when Kansas City gets it, I'm going to keep repeating that, positive vibes. If you want just a window of what it's going to look like, just tune into a few minutes of that Champions League game today at 2 o'clock. I have set my DVR, but I don't remember what channel it's on.
It's going to be on network television. I believe it will be
on
Fox.
Oh, is it TBS?
Fox.
No, I don't think it's on Fox. Fox has LPGA Women's Golf today. I think it's on TBS.
Really?
I think so.
Because last year it was on Fox.
It was on Big Fox last year.
It was on Big Fox last year, and they've put a lot of the, they've kind of changed it up. A lot of the Champions League games this year were on TNT, so it might be on a Turner affiliate, so it might be on TBS. I don't know why. I guess because LPGA has the rights,
It's the U.S. It's their
U.S. Open. Yeah, for the LPGA. Yes. So, but it's probably on TBS or TNT.
Of course, I had to mention that right before I said it. So it is going to be on TNT.
On TNT. All right, so I wish it was on network, because I think it would get enough views.
Yeah.
At least in the U.S., at least.
TNT is well-known for their sporting catalog with the NBA and things like that, so it should be easy fun. But just tune in. If you're not a huge soccer fan, if you're not a soccer fan at all, just tune in for 5 or 10 minutes on TNT at 2 o'clock, and you'll see just a small window of what the World Cup would look like in Kansas City in 2026. It's not a big window, just a small window. I'm going to check the time. Are we coming up on the break here? Okay. We will, that'll wrap up hour number two. We got one more to go. When we come back, Aaron Torres will join us. We'll talk a little college basketball. You're listening to Sports Saturday. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bowling is running the show. And you're on Sports Radio 810 WHB.